I have found that I often officiate weddings of people who don't love each other. Now, as I say that, it occurs to me that I'm doing a wedding this afternoon. If you're here, bride and groom, or family member, this is not a sign from God. You shouldn't go through with it. No, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about me. I can be more personal. When Christine and I got married 29 years ago, we didn't love each other. At least I didn't love her. Now I told her I loved her because I thought I loved her. But the truth is, for most of the 29 years we've been married, I didn't even know what love is. If I loved anybody in our marriage for most of these 29 years, I just love myself. That's who I loved. I'm convinced that many people, most people, all people, let's just go with many, that many people have convinced themselves that they love another person, but the person they truly love is themselves. This morning, we are going to continue our sermon series through questions that Jesus asked. And, you know, there's over 300 questions, kind of hard to pin down a specific number, kind of all depends on how you count. But in the course of Jesus's public ministry in the scriptures that we have, over 300 questions that he asked people, which shows that this wasn't an uncommon thing or an unusual thing. It was the normal way that Jesus went about communicating, is he asked a lot of questions. And I think probably that we could learn a lot from Jesus's communication style, because I don't think we probably ask enough questions. Yeah, I think questions engage people in a different way. They get around defenses. They require some self-examination. But I think that we would do well to study, how did Jesus communicate and relate to people? Maybe we should make questions more a part of our parenting, especially if we have teenagers. Maybe questions would be better to replace lectures. But questions in every environment will pay off. And this morning, we're going to look at three questions that Jesus asked. Three questions, consecutive questions. Boom, boom, boom. Let's go right to it in Luke chapter 6, verse 32. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who are good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do that. And if you lend to those from whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners expecting to be repaid in full. See, with these three questions, Jesus is trying to make a point that every single person this morning here needs to hear and listen to. His point is that if you love those who love you back, if you're good to people who are good to you, if you lend to people knowing you're going to be repaid, that's not Christian. It's not that it's bad to love people who love you. It's not like somehow that's wrong. It's just that it's normal. That's ordinary. Right? If you're good to those who are good to you, all that does is show you're not a psychopath. But there's nothing Christian about it. See, God doesn't call us to show ordinary love, but extraordinary love. Not the same kind of love that everybody shows, which, by the way, is what he means when he says even sinners do that. He's saying everybody does that. He's talking about a more unique kind of love, an unusual kind of love, a different kind of love, a more difficult kind of love, a love that only a Christian can show. Now this morning, we're going to talk about love primarily in the context of marriage, and that makes me nervous, to be honest. It makes me a little uncomfortable. Let me explain. If people living in Colombia who are age 30 and over, just in your mind, guess what percentage are single? 30 and over in the Colombia area, what percentage are single? Now, you know it must be somewhat interesting, or I wouldn't have asked the question, right? And the number is 30%. Almost one out of three people 30 and older in our area are single. And if you were to lower the age to 25 or to 22, or, you know, that percentage would go up quite a bit. So what's the point? Well, the point is that I'm a little bit nervous and uncomfortable about talking about marriage to a room that is at least, say, half full of single people. And on top of that, I think in the past, or maybe even the present, churches have idolized the traditional family unit so that if you don't fit the mom, dad, 2.4 kids and a dog, somehow you don't feel like you belong or you're excluded or this isn't for you. And of course, that goes contrary to everything that Jesus taught, because Jesus spent time with all kinds of people. He called all kinds of people, the rich and the poor, the powerful and the weak, the people of every race. He called all kinds of people to himself, people of every economic status, people, men and women, single and married. But it's also just not smart, and the whole idea that we did catch, right, that Jesus is single, the Apostle Paul is single. And so even knowing how many people here are single, and even knowing that the church has idolized the traditional family unit in a way that's made people feel excluded, still, I think it's good to talk about marriage from time to time. See, there are people here who are single now who one day will be married. And there are, I would say, every single person is friends with people who are married, and sometimes those married friends are going to ask you for advice and counsel and prayer and help and encouragement. And so you have to be an expert on being single if you're married, or being married if you're single, because we're called to be one body and to help one another follow Christ together. But the reality is that Jesus really isn't going after marriage in these questions. He's going after love, and that can be applied to marriages, but can be applied to our parents' relationship with our parents. It can be applied to our relationship with our siblings or friends or roommate or coworker. But let's go back to where we started. I'm convinced there are a lot of married people who are convinced they love their spouse, but the only person they really love, or the one they mainly love, is themselves. Let's take something like physical beauty. Beauty is a gift from God, and people all look different. You know that. We don't all look the same, and we have different tastes. We're drawn to different kinds of people, and that's a good thing. Beauty is a good thing from God, but I think there are people who confuse loving someone's beauty or being physically attracted to someone to loving them. And those are not the same thing. So sometimes I think that in our mind, we've convinced ourselves we love someone, but what we really love is their beauty. What we truly love is ourselves, and we enjoy adorning our life with their beauty. They have become an accessory to us. We like having pretty people with us. But it's not just physical beauty. I mean, it's something like emotional connectivity. Like, it's great to emotionally connect with someone so that you maybe enjoy talking about the same things. You know what each other's thinking. You can finish one another's sentences. It's great to have personalities that complement instead of conflict. But that's not love. That's not love. It's possible. It's possible to have an emotional connectivity and not really love the other person. The person you might love is yourself, and you think you love them because of the way they make you feel. But when you love someone because of the way they make you feel, you really love you. Or take something like security. Security is a good thing, and sometimes we want to get married because it makes us feel more secured, or we think we love someone in a marriage because they make us feel secure. Financial security, relational security. But of course, that's not loving them. That's just loving myself and what this person can do for me. See, all these things are great. There's nothing wrong with, in fact, there's a lot good about physical beauty and emotional connectivity and security, and the list could go on and on. And those things all usually show up in a lot of good, healthy relationships, good, healthy marriages, but they are not love. Not Christian love. Not extraordinary love. Not biblical love. Not true love. See, when Jesus asks us, if you love somebody who loves you, what credit is that to you? What he's doing is he's trying to call us out of selfish love and call us into selfless love. Because Jesus' question, if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? What that's showing us, what that's teaching us is that real biblical Christ-like love comes without strings attached. It's given without expecting anything in return. So what is true love? Well, you don't go to Wikipedia, and you don't go to a dating app, and you don't go to Shakespeare. You go to the Bible. And in 1 John 4, we read this. This is love. Not that we love God, but that he loved us and sent his son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. Dear friends, since God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. No one's ever seen God, but if we love one another, God lives in us, and his love is made complete in us. So now let's just go backwards through those verses. God lives in us. If God lives in us, we're going to love other people with the same love that God loved us with. Okay, great, but what kind of love was that again? Well, the first verse we read explains it. Let's read it again. This is love. Not that we love God, but that he loved us and sent his son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. Do you see what John's saying? He's saying that love comes in the shape of a cross. He's saying if you want to know what true love is, you've got to study the cross. So I want to share with you in just a moment, I'm going to share with you a definition of love written by a guy named Paul Tripp in a book called What Did You Expect? Several years ago, Paul Tripp came and did a couple conferences with us here, and this book is something or a chapter out of it. To be honest, I hate marriage books. I know that makes me bad, but I don't usually like them. But I found a couple I like, and this is one of them that I just make sense to me. And there's a chapter out of it that whenever I have a chance to talk to people about marriage, I just go through it with them. And every time I go through it with them, I learn so much. So let me share with you what he says. Here's the definition. Love is a willing self-sacrifice for the good of another that does not require reciprocation or that the person being loved is deserving. Now, I don't know if you hear that, but that's rooted in 1 John 4. That is love coming in the shape of a cross. Because that's exactly how Jesus loved us. Love is willing. Jesus came willingly. No one took his life from him, but he surrendered it. Self-sacrifice, it cost Jesus his life. Shame, humiliation, for the good of another, for our good, to meet our deepest needs, to give us life without requiring reciprocation, right? Because there's no way we could meet Jesus halfway. Like, we couldn't pay him back and without requiring that the person be deserving, because none of us deserves the love that Christ has shown us. So now, if we get it right, the kind of love that we're supposed to have toward other people is the kind of love that Jesus showed us. So this definition is not just somehow God loved us, but it's the kind of thing that we're to love other people with. So I'm going to reread that. And while we reread it together, here's what I want you to ask. What part of this definition is most challenging to me? Okay, here we go. Love is a willing self-sacrifice for the good of another that does not require reciprocation or that the person being loved is deserving. Well, what part of that definition is the most difficult for you to live out with the people that God has surrounded you with? Let's break it down. Love is willing. Love can be encouraged, but it cannot be forced. Love is a willing self-sacrifice. So love, real love, biblical love, Christ-like love will always cost you something. Sometimes it might cost you your pride. You just have to swallow your pride and admit that you are wrong. Sometimes it costs you the freedom to say whatever is on your mind. Sometimes we're going to need to self-edit, knowing that our words are powerful and can do great harm. We can't just say everything we are thinking and feeling at the moment. Sometimes love will cost us time or energy or freedom. Yeah? So love is always costly, though. My guess is if I said, hey, could somebody get me some water? I need some water, a bottle of water. There'd be several people who go, yeah, I'll go get you some water. But if you're sitting in your comfy chair tonight and your spouse says, hey, could you get me a bottle of water? What's your reaction going to be? What am I, like, you're a slave? Can't you get your own water? Why is it that we're willing to make sacrifices for relative strangers that we're unwilling to make for our own spouse? Love is a willing self-sacrifice for the good of another. Marriage is not about meeting your own needs. Marriage is about meeting your needs. Marriage is the opportunity to grow in putting someone else's needs, someone else's interests above your own. But that requires that you know what another person's needs and interests are. It requires that you become a student of your spouse. What is he or she going through today? What would be encouraging to him or her? What is this a busy season coming up? What could I do to lighten the load? What could I do to take something off his or her plate? What would they find encouraging in the middle of a difficult time? You've got to become a student of your spouse if you're going to truly love them, because love is for the good of another person. For an embarrassingly long time, in the 29 years that I've been married, I thought that emptying the dishwasher was communicating love to my wife. You laugh. It took me a really long time to get it. But I would go, well, how could you not feel loved? I mean, I emptied the dishwasher? Like, isn't that everything you'd ever possibly want? And it turns out it wasn't. It turns out that my wife thought emptying the dishwasher or other kind of household chores were just the basic requirements of being an adult and living together, right? But I didn't get any extra credit for that. She just thought that was kind of, you know, just common decency. But she didn't feel loved. Well, how come? Well, because we all receive and give love in different ways. I'm sure you're familiar with a book, or at least many of you will be. It's a widely known book called The Five Love Languages. And to be honest, there are things in that book, like every book, that I like and some things that I don't particularly care for. But the best point in the book is that we don't all give and receive love in the same way. And so the author has kind of laid out five love languages, and there might be more, there might be others, but he's laid out five. Let's see if I can get all five. I couldn't in the first service, so here we go. Words of encouragement, touch, acts of service, quality time, and gifts. I did it. I'm proud of myself. So words of encouragement, touch, acts of service, quality time, and gifts. Do you know which one of those is your spouse's primary love language? Your coworkers, your friend, your kid, your roommates? See, I was going around emptying the dishwasher because that acts of service communicated love to me. So I just thought everybody must be the same way. And it turns out that my wife and I are opposite. Words of encouragement mean everything to her and nothing to me. So that means that I'm learning a foreign language. And that I benefit a lot from a gracious wife who is multilingual. She will accept anything from me and call it love, right? I mean, she's learned that over 29 years. So do you know your spouse? What communicates love to him or her? Are you just assuming that what you do is what makes them feel loved? Love is willing self-sacrifice for the good of another that doesn't require reciprocation. You know what reciprocation means, yeah? I'll return the favor. I remember when I was a kid, I learned that word reciprocate when my mom was talking about having some people over for dinner that she didn't really want to have over. And so I said, "Mom, why are you having these people over if you don't want to have them over?" And she said, "Well, we've got to reciprocate." Meaning they had us to their house for dinner, and whether I like it or not, it's my turn to have them over to our house for dinner. It's somehow returning the favor, and there is great power in this principle of reciprocation. We have this feeling like we need to reciprocate, or that someone should reciprocate to us. So, for example, in this one study they did, to learn more about the power of reciprocation, they sent Christmas cards to random names in the phone book. So you're sitting there and you get a Christmas card at Christmas season with a picture and all that in a little letter from some random person. You don't know who it is. What do? Do you throw it away? No. What do? You send them a Christmas card back. You don't know them, but you think you might know them, and you can't live with the fact that they sent you a card and you didn't send them a card. That's the power of reciprocation, and that gets played out in marriage all kinds of ways. If you do this for me, I'll do this for you. We have kind of like a deal, a partnership, right? You do what this for me, I'll do that for you. But don't you see that when Jesus asks if you love those who love you or do good to those who do good to you, this is exactly what he's going after? This is exactly what he's saying is not love, not Christ-like love, not Christian love. Romans 5:8, but God demonstrates his own love for us in this, while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. You see, we're supposed to love each other with a Christ-like love. Christ's love does not require reciprocation. Therefore, we shouldn't. But too many of our relationships are built on, I'll scratch your back if you scratch mine. But that makes for a great business partnership, but it's not a love relationship. And if you bring that philosophy, I'll scratch my back if you scratch, I'll scratch your back if you scratch mine, if you bring that into a marriage or into a good friendship, you run the risk of being manipulative. Of just saying, I have a need and I want it met, so I'll do this for you if you do it for me. Is a miserable way to be married. Jesus doesn't require reciprocation. He doesn't look for us to meet him halfway. We were sinners when he died for us. There's nothing we can do to somehow pay Jesus back or meet him in the middle, meet him halfway. As soon as you tell me that it's 50-50, I immediately start, whether I want to or not, I immediately start looking and going, well, I think I'm doing more than my share. I think you're doing 47%. You got to catch up. Don't you find yourself doing that? Looking at the other nobody comes to me and says, hey, you know what? I just feel really bad. I'm not carrying my load at home. Nobody says that. But everybody looks and says, he or she, they're not carrying their load. We're easy graders on ourselves and hard graders on others. Love is a willing self-sacrifice for the good of another that does not require reciprocation of the person being loved is deserving. So Jesus is the opposite of Santa Claus. He's not checking his list twice to see who's naughty and nice. Hey, but then in the book, Tripp pushes further. He says, okay, all that sounds great when you're sitting in church, but what does it practically look like? Here's one thing he mentions. Love is being willing to have your life complicated by the needs and struggles of your spouse or friend or coworker without impatience or anger. See, one of the great challenges of love is the willingness to abandon your demand for a comfortable, predictable, hassle-free life. But instead, in love, you find yourself willing to put his needs or her needs above your own. So you head home after a hard day's work, and you go, man, I got a plan for my evening. And then your spouse has a need, something comes up that interrupts your plan. Love never sees his or her needs as an interruption. You had a plan, you're going to go play golf, you had a plan, you're going to go shopping, you were going to do whatever you're going to do, and now his or her needs are intervening on your time. You had a plan of how you're going to spend this money, but they have a different plan of what that money should go to. Love never sees that as an interruption. Love is always willing to take on a busier schedule, maybe get less sleep, lead a more complicated life because you love this person. I'm horrible at that. Christine, because her mom passed away several years ago, and so she has two brothers and a dad, and I don't know, men are Neanderthals, and they can't take care of themselves somehow. And so she has become kind of the glue that holds her family together. And so now they've had issues in their life. They've had some health issues, other personal things. Nobody lives in town, out of state. And so Christine comes and says, hey, you know what? My dad, my brother, they need me. I'm going to have to be on the road. I'm going to have to be traveling. I'm going to have to go help them to this appointment, to that appointment, do this, do that. Now, as she's telling me this at dinner, what do you think is going through my mind? Do I say to her, oh dear, how can I lighten your load while you handle all these pressures from your family? And do I say, well, what could I do to help your brother and your dad? And do I say, let's take a moment and just pray for them and their spiritual needs right now? No. Hopefully after 29 years, I'm getting better at masking it. But what I'm really thinking is, how does this affect me? This is going to cost me money, me time, me a hassle, me a problem. But love is willing to have our life complicated by the needs and struggles of others without being impatient or being selfish or being angry. Let's push down further. Love is actively fighting the temptation. So up on the screen, love is actively fighting the temptation to be critical and judgmental of your spouse or friend while looking for ways to encourage and praise. Sinful person in a marriage, friendship, whatever, working with another sinful person. Sinful times sinful equals a multiplication of sin. And so if you're going to find fault with everything your spouse does, if you're going to find fault with everything your coworker does, if you're going to make a big deal out of all their sins, failures, and shortcomings, which, by the way, are real, well, then buckle up, because it's going to be a bumpy ride. Because finding sinners sinning is no great accomplishment on your part. Finding sinners failing, falling short, that's what sinners do. What does love do? Does love make a big deal? Does love draw attention to their faults, their failures? Does love say, every time you screwed up, we got to point that out? 1 Peter 4:8 says, above all, love each other deeply because love covers over a multitude of sins. So in other words, love says, we don't need to make a deal out of this. Love says, this isn't something that's worth drawing attention to. We don't have to have a big conversation about it. Because if you're going to point out everything that I've screwed up, that's all we're going to talk about. Proverbs 19:11, a person's wisdom yields patience. It is to one's glory to overlook an offense. It is to one's glory to overlook an offense. To say, yeah, that was offensive, that was wrong, that was sinful, that was a problem, but we're just not going to make a big deal out of it. It's to my glory. Now, look, it's hard to know, because there's some times where you have to have a conversation. We have to say, look, we got to talk about that. That's not going to work. We got to get on the same page with that. That hurt me. That was offensive. That was rude, and we need to discuss it. But where is that? When do you overlook it, and love covers a multitude of sins, and when do you say, we got to talk through it? Well, how about this? How about let's just start with this. When you need to talk through it, how about if you approach it this way and say, look, I don't know if this is a big deal or not, but I can't get it out of my mind. So could we just talk about this? Because it just came across wrong to me. Instead of launching into, you're an idiot, you know, why'd you do this? We could just start the conversation different. But here's the deal, it's trial and error. It's not easy to figure out. There's no hard rule that says this can be overlooked and this should be discussed. But a rule of thumb I have, and you're always going to make mistakes, by the way, right? You're going to look back and go, we should have talked about that earlier. Or you're going to have big conversations and go, that probably wasn't worth talking about. But eventually you kind of figure it out. And my rule of thumb is if this is something that I don't get over right away, if this is something that nags in my mind and in my heart, if this affects how I treat them, you know, cold shoulder or being more aggressive or whatever, if it affects how I treat them, but you'll figure it out. All I know is that you can't talk about every failing, shortcoming, and sin. That's not what love does. But how about the other side? Love means being willing, when confronted by your spouse, to examine your own heart rather than rising to your defense or shifting focus. You know, your spouse points out something to you, and your first reaction is to go, I didn't do that. Oh, you totally misinterpreted that. I didn't mean anything like that. You're just making a big deal out of nothing. Do you know what you do? Oh, you want to start talking? Well, let me get out the list of the things you do, because if you're going to get out my list, I'll get out your list, and it's long. Our first reaction is to hire our inner lawyer, you know, and to start arguing. Because when your spouse points out something that you've done and you tell your spouse how you got to that point, why you did that, we call those reasons. And then when you point out something in your spouse and they bring up the same kinds of things, you know what we call them? Excuses. They're reasons when it's you, and they're excuses when it's them. Let's go to this last one. Love is seeking unity instead of being right or having the last word. I love to win. I love to win an argument. I love to build a case. I love to be proven right. Do you know that you're going to wake up tomorrow being married to this same person? You're going to go to the office the next day with that same person. He or she is going to be your roommate, whatever it is. So is the goal really to win? I've been vindicated. Or is the goal to say, hey, we're on the same team, we're unified, we're reconciled, we're back together? Here's the deal. Nobody falls in love. That's just silly talk, right? Nobody falls in love at first sight. It's just stop. We're getting dumber just talking about it, right? Love is something you grow in. So no, I didn't love my wife 29 years ago when we got married, but I love her more today than I did then. And I hope that 29 years in the future, if we're fortunate to be alive or stuck being alive that long from now, I'll love her even more. Love is something you grow in. And how do you grow? Well, you remember that's the way God loved you. Music team's gonna come back, and as they do, I wanna tell you about a thing I saw on television a few years ago. A guy named Rick Warren, you might be familiar with him, pastor at Saddleback out in California, purpose-driven life. Good guy. He was on one of those Sunday shows for like Christmas, and so Meet the Press or whatever will have on a pastor. And glad they had Rick Warren, because he represents Christianity much better than some of the other yahoos they bring out there. But anyway, he said, you know how you spell love? A Christian spells love G-I-V-E. A Christian spells love G-I-V-E. Give. Give my time, give my energy, give my patience, give my concern, give my prayers. But how do I give? How do I continue to give? Well, I remember what Christ has given for me. I remember the love that he loved me with. How do I love someone who's unlovely at the moment? Well, I remember that Jesus loved me when I was unlovely. How do I show patience to someone who over and over does the same thing? Well, I remember that God has shown patience to me when over and over I have fallen into the same sins. The ability to love other people the way Jesus calls us to, without expecting anything back or getting anything in return, with no strings attached, is to remember that's exactly how God loved me in Christ. It's the power of his love that allows me to love others. So we can grow in our love for others as we remember how much God loved us. Amen.